Welcome to the ABPMR Part 2 Examination Podcast. If you're preparing to take the exam this year, listen in as ABPMR board directors, Part 2 examiners, and other Part 2 experts talk all things Part 2, including the structure of the exam, scoring, study tips, what to expect on exam day, and more. Welcome back to the Part 2 podcast. My name is Lizzie. I'm the communications coordinator for the ABPMR. Today we have another special episode where you will get to hear from Part 2 examiners as they give their insight for what to expect from your examiners during the exam. So this episode will be helpful to understand the role of the examiner during the exam and what your examiner might say or do, just so you're extra prepared for those interactions on exam day. Today, we're joined by Dr. Soohwan Ho. She's assistant professor at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Dr. Ho, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So to start, how long have you been an examiner for the ABPMR?
I think I'm going into my eighth year now. Okay. So a long time.
Yeah, a long time. To start, can you talk a little bit about the role of the examiners during the exam and why we have two examiners?
Yeah, so there are two 50-minute sessions that each candidate has. And in each of those sessions, there will be two examiners, and I'll call them examiner A and examiner B. Usually examiner A will start off, which will be an active examiner. So you will be interacting with that examiner only. And then examiner B is the observer or inactive examiner. So examiner A will go through the clinical scenarios with the candidate and move them along so that they can demonstrate their abilities in several areas. Examiner B will be observing, potentially taking some notes down, and then also scoring at the same time. After two clinical scenarios, then the examiners will switch. So then examiner A becomes the inactive examiner, and then examiner B becomes the active examiner. And so the roles will change.
So when an examiner is examiner B or the inactive examiner, they'll be in the exam, but they won't be saying anything. They'll just be sitting and observing.
Correct. Correct. Okay. So they're watching what the candidate is doing and also listening to what the candidate is saying and scoring at the same time.
Perfect. So one examiner will be talking at once for two cases and then they'll switch. Mm-hmm. And then what happens after the first exam session? So we have two 50-minute sessions with two examiners, and then they switch examiners after one session, correct?
Correct. 10-minute break between sessions so the candidate can go to the bathroom or get something to drink. And then the second session will start. So it'll be the same setup where there will be two examiners, examiner A and examiner B. Usually, again, examiner A will start off, do the two clinical scenarios, and then they will switch off where examiner A then becomes the inactive examiner, and then examiner B becomes the active examiner.
Perfect. So candidates will have a total of four examiners on exam day. And that just adds to the validity of the exam.
Correct. Adds to the validity of the exam. Correct.
Perfect. Okay. So moving into your role as an examiner, what can candidates expect to hear from their examiners? And maybe what are some specific cues that you give examinees on exam day?
So examiners will introduce themselves and then move the candidate along in the scenario or the cases. Sometimes we'll look for further explanation on answers that are given. So some cues that the candidates might hear would be, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Or can you explain that a little bit further? What we're looking for is what knowledge base that candidate has, and if they can explain their answers a little bit further. Examiners will want to know about the thought process behind a certain answer. So not just looking for more information, but how they came to that, how they came to give that answer. So want to understand that thinking process.
Candidates in the past have sometimes been worried about feeling rushed as they move through the exam, just because of the pacing of the exam and the examiners moving them along through cases. So what can you say about how candidates should prepare for the pacing of the exam and the role of the examiner in bringing the candidate through the cases?
So obviously there's a finite time for every candidate. And yes, the examiners are trained to move the candidates along so they can get through these clinical scenarios. The examiners aren't there to fluster or to frustrate candidates. They really want to see what type of knowledge base these candidates have. If you feel like you're being rushed, take a deep breath. Just say, hey, maybe I need a little bit of time to collect my thoughts and then keep moving along.
Is there anything else you want to say to part two candidates this year?
I know it can be nerve-wracking. This is a different experience than any experience that you've done in residency. So take a deep breath, relax. It'll be okay. The examiners aren't out to get you. They want to just see what knowledge base you have. So good luck to everybody. I'm sure everyone will do a great job, and just take a deep breath.
We really appreciate your insight into some of the things candidates might hear during the exam and how their examiner will act. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Yelena Spirchev. She's the associate professor with the Department of Rehab Medicine at the University of Washington, and she spends her clinical time with the Spinal Cord Injury Service at VA Puget Sound. So Dr. Spirchev, welcome to the podcast today. Thank you for being on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And how long have you been an examiner for the ABPMR?
I have been an examiner for just over 10 years.
Okay, just over 10 years. Could you talk a little bit about how examiners move candidates through the exam and what candidates can expect with the pacing and timing?
Certainly. So as an examiner, I have a set amount of time to go through a number of assigned vignettes. And within each of those vignettes, there are certain components that I want to make sure that my examinee moves through. So having offered the exam before, I'm pretty comfortable with knowing how much time the examinee will need to get through each of those portions of the vignettes. In our dialogue with the examinee, I try to work them through each of the sections, allowing them enough time to think about their responses, offer the responses, perhaps expand on the responses. And when I have enough information from them to get a good sense of where that examinee stands, I will intentionally move them along in the next section. The examinee may perceive that as being a very brusque discontinuation of the one section and moving along, or it may be a more gentle one of, you talked about that, let's move on.
So if it's more of a direct prompting to move on, what might that look like, or what might they hear?
The examinee may hear in that case, thank you, let's move on. So it may be that short. The examinee should not take that as they have done poorly on that section, but rather the examiner has enough information to move that examinee along and really wants them to move along to give them the opportunities to demonstrate their knowledge in all of the sections.
You just mentioned that the examiner wants to give the candidate the opportunity to demonstrate their knowledge and prompt them to explain more or elaborate on something. So could you explain maybe some of the cues that you'll give to candidates in order to get more information or lead them toward a certain direction during the exam?
So during the examination, the examinee may offer some information and the examiner may pause and say, tell me more about that. Or the examinee may offer as much information as they have in that area and the examiner may say, you mentioned this, can you expand on that? Or you mentioned that. Why did you include that in your history or your differential diagnosis?
Right. And it's important to say too, like you mentioned, the examiners have been trained on how to move candidates through the exam and get through all of the cases and vignettes. So the candidate should really just follow the examiner's prompts and not worry about timing, because the examiner, exactly like you said, they'll know when they have the information they need and then they'll move on to the next vignette. It's also important to say that examiners are trained to not give verbal or nonverbal feedback during the exam. What can you say about examiners' behavior since they're trained to not give any feedback?
I think this is one of the more challenging parts of the exam, because as humans, we oftentimes gauge our response or gauge our dialogue based on the visual feedback that we receive from someone. As an examiner, we are trained not to offer that feedback so as to not guide the examinee down a pathway of feeling that they're doing very well or that they're perhaps struggling in an area. So we will be delivering, for the most part, poker faces. Our responses won't be, yes, tell me more, but more along the lines of, I see, what else, let's move on, or I understand, or what more can you add? If we ask something like, what more can you add, it may not mean that the examinee has forgotten to include items, but rather it's a way that we can direct the pace and allow the examinee an opportunity to either slow down or perhaps expand their thought process. It's our roles if the examinee has perhaps offered a very small list of items or has the potential to think about the vignette a little more broadly. That's our role as an examiner to help that examinee along in asking them more more questions such as that, tell me more, or you mentioned this, why did you ask that? But even if we do that, the examinee should not expect us to give them a cheer of it, yes, exactly, right on, but rather to accept that response, yes, let's move on. I will offer one exception to that visual feedback is each section will offer a role play. And at that point, the examiner will intentionally say, let's pretend that I am person X and you are person Y. How would you respond? The examiner will then change their behavior and will then be offering visual feedback and expect the examinee to play the role potentially of a physician serving a patient or a physician serving, communicating with a parent of a patient that that's involved with the care. And that really is a chance for there to be kind of that emotional contact and communication between the two.
Right. And that's domain E you're talking about, correct?
That's correct.
Right. So candidates can prepare for that. But yeah, exactly like you said, the rest of the time, the examiners will have their poker face on. So that's just good to mention because it might just throw candidates a little bit to not have any, not even nods from their examiners or, like you said, verbal cues like, yes, that's right. So very important to mention. Do you have anything else you want candidates to know about examiners and what they can expect on exam day?
When the examinee first enters the virtual exam room and the examination starts, the examinee should, number one, take a deep breath. Number two, they should think about commonly encountered scenarios, either on the inpatient service, when they're rounding on patients, when they're seeing individuals in consults, or when they're in the outpatient setting. So think about what are the common questions that you will ask all patients when they come to you with a particular concern? How do you gather that information? How do you collect the history? And then how do you, as a physician, come up with that differential diagnosis? And think about how to articulate to the examiner what is your, how you came up with that list and why did you include some things and why you didn't include other things. Share with the examiner what your thought process is, because that'll give the examiner a chance to look into your mind and understand how you're putting together that clinical scenario and will then be able to direct their questions to identify potential additional areas that the examinee may wish to explore or to really be confident with the examinee's knowledge and move them along to the next section.
We've talked in past episodes about the importance of the thought process and how the best you can do is just to explain your thought process to the best of your ability and why you're doing certain things. So that will definitely play a big role in the examiner-candidate communication. Like you just said, based on the thought process and what's explained, it will kind of determine the other prompts that the examiner might ask the candidate. So that's great insight into some things candidates can expect from their examiners on exam day. Thank you so much for coming on today and being our guest for this episode. I really appreciate your insight as a just over 10-year examiner.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity.